Welcome to Season 4 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. Season 4 brings a new feature, The Daily Direct, spotlighting the important work of local journalism as an antidote to the troubling spread of online disinformation. This new monthly feature, in addition to the existing Crossing the Divide podcast series, takes you behind the scenes at the Daily Sentinel with exclusive access to the journalists and decision makers who deliver local headlines as they navigate the precarious shift to a digital news age. This episode introduces readers to one of the Sentinel's newest editions, all about food columnist Christine Gallagher. Christine's column is featured monthly in The Out and About and focuses on international cuisine and the local scene, as well as exploring issues of food insecurity. Christine, welcome to Crossing the Divide, The Daily Direct. I'm here with you today to talk about your new column, All Things Food, running, I believe, the first Friday of every month in the Sentinel's Out and About. Is that correct?
That is. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Well, before we get to the details of your column, tell us a little bit about yourself, your personal history. Are you from Grand Junction originally?
Originally from South Dakota, actually. Ah. And then we moved to Denver when I was 12. And then ended up here about 24 years ago from our work. And we had a little 8-month-old baby and added 2 more kids along the way.
Well, great. Now, I do know this personally about you, so I'm going to ask, but I know that you and some of your family members have been active in the theater community here. So just tell us a little bit about that, because I saw your son in a performance and I was blown away.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, his name is Gabriel. And when he was younger, he was really into musical theater, and we got to do it together, three productions with High Desert Opera. And then I've done 3 more without him too.
Oh, great.
So yeah, we love to sing, we love music, and it's just really fun.
Now, is that something he's going to pursue, you think, beyond?
Not right now. Nope, he's getting ready to go to college.
And all right.
Focused on other stuff.
I get it. Well, he's very talented.
Oh, thank you.
I can definitely say that. So All Things Food is going to appear on a monthly basis, so it's not a full-time endeavor for you. What is your day job?
So I'm a naturopath. So I do acupuncture and herbs and nutrition and counseling, that kind of stuff. Also an EMT, although I don't do that. I do that for more volunteer work.
Wow, that's heavy volunteer work.
Yeah. So, my day job is working with patients and healthcare in a more integrative setting, mind, body, spirit.
So you're involved in health and nutrition. So I have to ask you this question, because we know that Americans have a lot of health problems because of their diet. So when you look at the American diet as a whole, with the knowledge that you have, what do we need to improve upon in terms of what and how we eat to achieve better health?
Definitely, we need to just focus on real food. There's so much chemicals and fake foods out there. When my kids were little, I taught them, when we go to the grocery store, I'm like, because they'd be like, oh, mom, I want this, I want that. I'm like, hey, if it's something we could make at home, then I'll buy that for you. If it's something that was made in a lab, I'm not buying it. And so they learned how to like read the labels to not even bother asking me about a lot of stuff. And we did a lot of cooking when the kids, I was a stay-at-home mom for many years, and we did a lot of cooking because they eat all the time.
Yeah. Now, are your kids picky eaters? Do you have a picky eater in the family, or do they have pretty varied tastes?
They're really varied. We showed them all kinds of food. I remember, I think it was the famous chef Marcus Samuelson that talked about how weird it was that he thought we had children's menus at restaurants. Ah. And it's like these dumbed down sort of just like macaroni and cheese and fish sticks or whatever. I mean, chicken nuggets. And he's like, you know, when you go to other countries, they just eat the same food everyone else eats. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to do that with my kids at all. So I just have introduced them to foods around the world. And I traveled with them a bunch too. And you know, if they didn't like it, I'm not going to force them to eat it or anything. But I always said you had to at least try it once, because don't tell me you don't like it if you actually didn't try it. And I tried to, you know, make them cook too. I sent them all to the local culinary school when they were teenagers. So they all had to learn how to cook. And you know, be responsible for feeding us too. So then they know it's not really fun when people reject your food. As a parent, when you're cooking and then they're like, I don't like it.
Especially when you've been in the kitchen all day.
Right. So, you know, just real food and really try different tastes from around the world. It's really fun.
And I've also heard, I don't know if you've ever heard this, I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently your taste buds kind of change every 7 years or so. So they tell you that even if it's something that you don't like, try it again a couple years later, you might develop a taste for it.
Absolutely. And also how you prepare it. So like I might not like Brussels sprouts if they're like overcooked and horrible, but if they're done just perfectly or raw, they're delicious. Or, you know, so even when someone tells me they don't like a certain food, I then work with them to see if maybe we could just prepare it differently. And it brings out the flavoring. So that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, food consumption obviously plays a big role in our physical health. What do you see is the emotional and spiritual connection that human beings have to the food they consume?
That's a really complex question. But, you know, a lot of families, too, have a lot of emotional eating because it's tied in with love and showing concern and care. And so there can be a lot of really not helpful connections. And if people end up with eating disorders or really overeating, and then people keep trying to feed them more because they love you, and it can just get really messy, and it loses. It's just like, we really should be eating because we're hungry. That should be number one. And then like, okay, then, you know, let's look at the nutrition of it. And enjoyment, and food should be fun too. I mean, cooking should be fun, eating should be fun, but we don't need to overeat, and it shouldn't really be attached to emotions in terms of love and everything. But I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. I want to make food that makes people happy, so it's tricky.
Were you always interested in cooking and preparing food? I mean, did you spend a lot of time in the kitchen as a kid? Was this something you were always drawn to?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was really fun. Also, probably because it made people happy. But we did a good job with it. And then I just liked cooking on my own because I always leaned more towards being a vegetarian, and my family was, you know, in South Dakota, very meat eating focused. So I experimented with a lot of recipes for myself, so that I could have something to eat too. And, I've always thought it was fun, and I really liked going to my parents were really big on taking us to restaurants as children. Mm. And so we did that with our kids too, because I wanted them to, and I also wanted them to learn how to behave in a restaurant. and then my parents traveled with us a lot, so I got a lot of exposure to all kinds of food.
I have to ask you this question as a wife and mother, as I am as well. Do you ever find yourself not enjoying daily meal preparation? And I ask this question because I have noticed that many famous chefs are men, and I've often wondered if there aren't more women in that particular field, because historically women might view it as a chore rather than an artistic endeavor, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I really dislike daily cooking. Daily cooking for children is just miserable, I think. And it's constant. It's like, you know, you wake up, you feed them, then you're cleaning it up, and then you got to start thinking about what you're going to make again, and then you're cleaning it up, and then periodically they complain about what you just made. Mm-hmm. And then you got another mess, and then, oh, it's time for a snack. And yeah, that was tedious. When the kids were younger, I used to do Supper Solutions, which was great. We would pre-make food and freeze it, and then it's all ready to go. And because part of it is, I think what I don't like is thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's all that prep and then going to the grocery store, all of that stuff, then coming back from the grocery store and putting it all away. And I don't like that process at all. I prefer, like, my favorite cooking is for like a dinner party with grown-ups.
Yes.
That's really fun. And I turn on the music, pour some wine, cook for hours. I mean, that's really fun. But the daily grind of cooking for little kids is not pleasant. But there's a lot of great strategies. I also did, you know, one, I incorporated them to cooking and having to make a meal a week. So that was helpful. Mm. Then I found like online all these crock pot recipes where you can just freeze. So I would make 30 meals. Would spend 4 hours, 5 hours prepping all this stuff in the kitchen. My husband would take the kids away. I would just prep it all up, and freeze them, and then you just defrost them, put them in. That was awesome. They do not have great memories of those years as much. They like me doing everything from scratch, but I'm like, this isn't a restaurant. You don't get to order what you want. here's, we have the one item here for you.
I have an Instant Pot and a crock pot that I need to become better friends with. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. The freezing things can be really great because you can use really great ingredients and just chop them up and prep everything. And I mean, to be able to make 30 meals in 4 hours, that's great. I thought it was terrific.
Yeah. I always loved cooking. And then I had a family. And I find that I just don't like it as much anymore.
Yeah.
But I do try. I think, you know, I do try. And I enjoy cooking. I enjoy preparing something that people enjoy. That brings you a sense of happiness. And but yeah, it can be tough on a daily basis.
Right. Well, I mean, there's not much that one likes to do that one wants to do maybe four times a day.
Right.
That's just a lot.
And for me, it's the cleanup. Sometimes the thought of the cleanup is what keeps me from the creative part I love. It's cleaning up afterwards.
Well, we had a deal. Whoever cooks does not have to clean up. So
that's a good one. We need to employ that one.
That's an important one.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
So you have traveled all over the world and tried all different kinds of cuisine. So from a culinary perspective, what do you think is the best thing about life here in the Grand Valley in terms of culinary experience that perhaps you haven't found anywhere else that you've traveled, if there is anything? Because of course we have a lot of agriculture here. We have the wineries, the fruit.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to read my next column.
It's
all about that.
Yeah, that'll be a little tease. All right.
Yeah, it's going to be focused on the bounty that we have here. We are so lucky to have fresh produce, free-range meats, cheeses, wine. You know, I thought, especially like at the beginning of the pandemic too, I was extra grateful for, you know, like all the farms that we have here, and that I knew that we were always going to have food. We should be fine. You know, other people, when I was talking to them in other cities and other states, they had food shortages in the grocery stores and all these different things. And it was like, I was just getting food delivered, and I got, you know, my eggs from Gypsy Rooted Farms and, you know, like all of that stuff. And I was like, we are so lucky here.
Yeah.
And it tastes better because it didn't like get picked before it was ripe and then shipped across the country. And you know, I think local produce and local farmers and wineries, everybody, we're so lucky here with that.
And I think as a germaphobe, you know, reading about foodborne illness, the more something is handled, the more likely it is to pick up something along the way. So that is another benefit of having the food right here, is that chain isn't quite as long and your chances of, you know, getting something are much less.
Well, and we have relationships with the farmers. You know, you can, if there is any sort of problem, you can just call them, you know, like versus all this other food, it's who knows where it originally came from. Sometimes it's really tricky to, and so again, this valley, the relationships in general, you know, I know chefs, I know farmers, I know winery, you know, that's really special here in a way that you don't necessarily get in bigger places.
So do you frequent all the many markets during the summer? Do you do that?
I do that. I love Blaine's. Have you been to Blaine's at all?
I haven't.
Oh, you are in for a treat. The best tomatoes I've ever had in my life. They melt in your mouth. And when I was growing up, I didn't like tomatoes. But I have that, you know, back to trying things again. But also where you get them grown, you know, Blaine's are the best. Not, he doesn't pay me for that.
That endorsement.
I was introduced to them. 626 has the restaurant 626 has a caprese salad that feature his tomatoes, and they're heirloom tomatoes. And so maybe 10, 15 years ago, I had them. I was like, what is this? It's like a different plant, really. I mean, definitely worth trying.
Yeah. Yeah. Grocery store tomatoes just don't quite.
There's no flavor.
No. Yeah. They don't quite live up to.
And pretty soon we'll have Olathe sweet corn.
That's
so good.
That is really good. I am looking forward to that. That's a great aspect of summer. As much as I love the fall foods, the apples and the pears and the squashes.
The wine.
I love that too. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, now I'm looking forward to fall. Okay. That's a long way off yet. Do you consider any country or region of the world to have what you would consider to be the best cuisine? You know, some people love Italian or Middle Eastern, or is there any type of ethnic cuisine that you tend towards or you think, yeah, that's kind of my thing?
Oh, I like so many different ones. I like pretty much anything around the Mediterranean. I lived in Greece for a semester in college, so I'm very partial to Greek food. And, you know, again, back to real food, you know, these fresh fruits and vegetables, fish, whatever, it's just grown right there. Israel has amazing food. You know, Italy, I like pizza, but I'm not a big,
not
a big pasta sort of person. I love all kinds of different Asian foods. Ethiopian cuisine is one of my favorites. Wish we had an Ethiopian restaurant here.
Yeah, I have to go to Denver for that.
Right?
They have some there.
So delicious. And again, you've got all these wonderful plants and beans and stuff too that's great for vegetarians and meat eaters. So yeah, I like all kinds of different foods.
So you showed up in the studio today with you brought something with you, a beautiful book here. And I see that you are the author. So tell me about your cookbook.
Well, I'm so excited about it. I've been working on it for, almost 20 years, but the actual really writing it was about 6 years. And so it just arrived last week, and I can't believe I get to hold it in my hands. And it's a book about dining around the world. I started it when I had little kids at home, and we were broke, and there really weren't a lot of international recipes or restaurants here in town. And I thought, I want to introduce my kids to the world and all this types of cuisine. And so I started a dinner party group, and everyone would we'd choose a country every month and cook from it. And so that was where the book is inspired from. And I'm really excited about it. And it's recipes from countries that maybe people aren't familiar with, such as Ethiopia or Sri Lanka, the Philippines, Belize. I picked countries from all the five continents, nothing from Antarctica. And it's all geared for the home chef.
Now, a lot of international recipes have ingredients sometimes that are hard to find. Are these mostly ingredients that you can easily find?
Yeah, so every single recipe are things you can find here in Grand Junction. Because that was something that when I was working on the recipes, sometimes I would have to kind of change things a little bit because we're not going to necessarily get banana leaves. Although we now have some interesting markets that we can get some things like that. But these recipes are all things that you can just get here in town. You don't have to order anything or go to another city. And they're all easy recipes.
Yeah. They don't seem to have like a ton of ingredients
here. No. Not a ton of ingredients, easy instructions, easy to follow. I have done a lot of recipe testing with friends around the country, make sure also with altitude, because homemade breads in there, a lot of desserts. And, you know, each chapter is a different country. There's 12 chapters, so you could do one each month, and you don't have to buy 12 different cookbooks. You know, you don't have to have an Ethiopian cookbook. You can have this cookbook, which also has Greek food in it and all different things. And each chapter also has vegetarian entrees. Almost everything is gluten-free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, except for the breads. But although in the Brazil chapter, there's a bread, it's a Parmesan roll, pão de caju, that is amazing. And it's naturally gluten-free. It's tapioca flour.
Oh, wow. And you even have pictures, which is always helpful to kind of visualize what the end product is going to look like.
Absolutely. I thought that was critical because we eat with our eyes first. Mm-hmm. And I had a professional photographer, a food photographer out in San Francisco, actually, took the photos, and we had a blast doing that. It was really fun.
Well, that looks great. Now, how many years in the making was this book?
If you count when I started cooking these things, about 20. But in terms of actually like writing and proofreading and testing, about 6 years.
Wow. And where is it available now? Where can people find it?
Yeah. Actually, I can give you a link right now. It's only available through the publisher, which is Create My Cookbook. But it's going to be available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and other stuff too.
Well, great. You have to look for that. And I don't even think I said the title. What's the title?
Oh, it's called Dining Around the World with Friends. And then it has a subtitle that was meant to be, because I was at home with little kids, A Year of Exploring New Countries and Foods Without Leaving Home. Mm. Then it got a little kind of ironic in the pandemic.
Since
we can't travel to most of these countries right now. I was like, well, interesting, that's when it's coming out.
That is very interesting. Good timing.
I guess so.
Not good for anything else, but for your cookbook, it's not a bad thing.
Thank you.
We're running out of time here. Again, we'll be looking for your column the first Friday of every month in the Out and About. So my final questions for you are, what do you hope people take away from your column? What purpose would you like it to serve in the lives of Sentinel readers?
Well, I'm really hopeful that people are uplifted by it and that it brings people together. I think we've had, you know, in the last several years, obviously a lot more division in our town, in the country, in the world. And so food to me is this great universal language. And, you know, we can all come together and share a meal, talk about food, and just, I want it to be very positive, and I wanted to add something upbeat, happy. I also wanted to focus on local and what makes this valley great, and, you know, showcase some of the different chefs, the different foods. I'm also going to be talking at some point about food insecurity, charities like Meals on Wheels, as well as food banks and school things. So there'll be a, you know, that's why I called it All Things Food, because really food has an intersection of so many different things. And so, and I hope I get to do it more than once a month too.
Ooh,
that would be really fun. So hopefully at least twice a month or so. I keep getting emails from people wondering, wait, where's your column? I read it last week, but now where is it? So I'm like, gotta wait till next month.
Well, I think we can arrange that, because I know Jay is really big on the food content. So
we've had some good conversations about international food and everything too. Yeah. He's been very supportive.
I'm sure we could line something up there. We'll make it happen.
Oh, thanks.
All right, Christine, thank you so much for taking the time with me today, and we look forward to your column.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a real delight.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can access our full lineup of conversations with Western Voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and now on Amazon Music and Audible. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. To stay up to date on the day's headlines, visit gjsentinel.com and sign up for your Daily Dose newsletter. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.